And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your host, Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. It's April 14th, 2019. That was Bella Ciao. Very appropriate song today, folks, because that was a song of the Italian resistance movement right after World War II, or during World War II, the movement that overthrew Mussolini and fascism. And it's quite appropriate since one of our big enemies, of course, is in Rome, and its various cohorts around the world, including, as it turns out, the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church. Now, today, as our special guest again, Deborah, survivor and insider from that church, is going to return today to talk more about those crimes and what we can do about them. And she was on 2 weeks ago, on March 31st. She's going to join us again in a minute. Now, this, of course, is a very important week, as we've been announcing for some time, mid-April. This is the week when things are getting cranked up again, people. Let me just remind you, first of all, looking back, April 14th, 2008, the occupation of the Holy Rosary Cathedral in Vancouver that forced Canada to apologize about genocide. April 15th, 2005, when the movement to expose these crimes was officially inaugurated in Vancouver. April 20th, 2014, the third exorcism outside the Vatican, and the declaration 5 years ago today that legally and spiritually disestablished the Church of Rome, saying, people working in that church, you're not obligated anymore to follow the allegiance or authority of any of those officers. You can stand separately away from those crimes. Now, that message is spread all over the world. A very important news bulletin, a movement called Not in Our Name, which is Catholic priests in Ireland and other countries, including America, Canada, and England, they're forming a conference. They're establishing their founding conference in Ireland Friday, May 3rd. Very exciting development. Those priests are actually moving to separate from Rome to say we do not follow the policies of the Church of Rome governing child abuse and other issues. So it's really another reformation starting, folks. And especially your Irish listeners, please write to us at thecommonland@gmail.com. We'll put you in touch with those brave clergy over there who are defying their own bishops and facing a lot of consequences for doing that. Also, another news update. You remember from the report about the forced vaccination program in Rockland County, New York. A ludicrous situation where they declare a state of emergency and say all children have to be vaccinated or their parents will go to jail for 6 months. Kids can't even appear on the street. I mean, what's going on here, people? Well, fortunately, the week following that emergency declaration, a district court judge said, no, sorry, you can't do that. It abolished that emergency decree, the court order, and said that it's not even an epidemic, so what is all the panic here, people? Well, what was interesting, 2 days after that court decision, Mayor Bill de Blasio in New York announces, well, we have a state of emergency in Brooklyn. Everyone's got to get vaccinated. So almost a way to say to the courts, screw you, we're going to bring in this police state at the behest of Big Pharma, regardless of what the courts say. So this is the ongoing struggle we face, folks, back and forth all the time, the will of the people versus the corporatocracy. Now, you can do something this week about that. There are people this Sunday and next Sunday and throughout the week that are going to be confronting these crimes of church and state. Some of them will be handing out leaflets and flyers. Some of them will be occupying churches and making citizen arrests. Others will be going to their governments and saying, we don't want these churches to have tax-exempt status anymore. Church of England, Church of Rome, United Church of Canada, any of these criminal bodies, and the Mormon Church, for that matter. And all of these activities are beginning this week. It's an ongoing campaign. To be involved, write to ITCCS office. That's the International Tribunal of Crimes in Church and State, ITCCSoffice@gmail.com. See the ITCCS postings at murderbydecree.com, along with all the other stuff. And a final announcement, this Good Friday, that's April 19th to 20th, we have confirmed that, yes, there will be two more Ninth Circle ritual ceremonies. The ones that have been confirmed in the Mormon Temple in Salt Lake City and the Mormon Temple in Rome. We have that from Vatican insiders that, yes, there's a ceremony being planned for this Friday night, Good Friday. That's a common satanic high point. So April 19th to 20th, midnight, we will, as much as possible, to be able to deploy our people to try to stop these events as we've done before. So without further ado, with all of that, again, I want to emphasize any of you listening have a role to play in this. So write to us, donate, murderbydecree.com. There's a donate button there, how you can do it. Order our books at amazon.com. Just put in Kevin Annett, especially my latest book called The Border, a post-Canadian anthology. Ah, yes. So, without further ado, let's bring on Deborah. Hello. How are you,
Hello,
Deborah?
Hello, how are you? I'm well. I'm well. Thank you.
Well, you know, life goes on, the struggle goes on. And
I'm just so glad.
Yeah, I'm so glad to have you back because we only touched the surface last time, and it's, you know.
Kevin, I can't hear you. Are you there?
Okay, sounds like Deborah's up there. I'll get Dawn to try to bring her back.
I'm right here. I can hear you. Yeah, I'm back.
Oh, you can. All right.
Okay.
Well,
hi.
Good. You're coming in fine.
good.
So what I was just saying was that we want to recap for folks who may not have heard last
mm-hmm.
time.
But
also talk about what do you think the purposes of these crimes were, kind of the bigger context, and what we can do about it. So we want to cover all of that today. Let me just get you to give a little bit of a background again for yourself and some of the things that you witnessed we can talk about, you know, as, during the show, but just give us a little bit of background.
One of the things that was important that we covered when I was on last time was being a witness for child sacrifice and then also fetus, just abortions and eating fetuses and drinking blood. And, you know, it's something that is a part of every ceremony. There's always blood involved. There's always torture involved. There's always drugging. There's always terror and terroristic acts that are happening. The more violent it could be, the more it actually is triggering and you know, jarring to those that are in witnessing, in attendance, even for the people that are part of the group of the cult. You know, that it's not that they're not affected as well. It's just, you know, reinstated. So there's so much trauma that is being transferred, and, you know, trauma bonding that is going on, and then also the whole ritual symbolism behind it, and what's being experienced, and, you know, who's being worshipped, and
right,
what kind of things are going back and forth. So there's that we talked about. We also talked about how it is going on in numerous locations around the world. It was not just in Catholic locations, but also the Mormon temples, and, you know, and how they're actually specifically designed for that reason. And, you know, the security side of that is you can't just go in and visit a Mormon temple. You have to have what is called the temple recommend, and it has to be has to have two signatures. So you're going to be interviewed by two different clergymen, so you'll have your bishop's signature and then a stake president's signature. And so there's, you know, levels of how of getting
right
there. So that's for the lay person, and then anybody that's part of this secret society is definitely going to be able to get in.
Very protected. And, you know, when you look
yes
at some of the things you were describing, I mean, the top officers, people like Gordon Hinckley, the
yes
present guy,
Russell Nelson,
I think his name
yeah
was, directly Nelson involved in murdering children, in being involved
yes
in these very strange rituals. Now, the first question, of course, people have that who do accept that these things go on is, how do they get away with it? And when you look at the number of Mormons who have been state senators, the kind of money, I think somebody said they have assets of $32 billion.
Yeah,
big corporation. I guess, in a way, it's not surprising. But when you were within it, I know that it took you a long time to leave, and I think we just touched on this briefly. It's amazing the degree to which they control everybody. And have you ever seen movements of dissent within the church of people not liking this, or is it like total mind control going on?
There's so much mind control that is being employed, and it's being reinforced all the time. So the rhetoric, the language, just even the church ceremonies when, you know, attending church and taking sacrament, the way the prayers are done, they actually, I mean, there was one, we're trained in the ceremony. I was, recall when I was young, not in church. I was in a ceremony and it was like a classroom setting, and there were more children. There were children other than me, but we were all in, you know, draped in kind of hospital type gowns. And in that state that we were watching or being instructed, and we needed to repeat back what was being said to us. And the things that were being trained into us in this drug state, so now we don't have really any resistance. We're just basically in the space of repeating back. It was more very chanting, and it was very much about who we're supposed to worship. Satan is our deliverer, and we needed to repeat that back. And there's no way that we can get out of this. I have sinned. We have all sinned. And, you know, just the one who has power, Satan has power. So we would like repeat these things. And then in real time, so that, you know, that's the ceremony. Terrible things happen there, but that's also in a deeper state. So now you have this lodged in your subconscious, and it's horrific and terrible. And so recall is not necessarily the first thing you're going to access, but then you go to church, and in church, you know, there are songs that are being played that you sing as the child that they utilize in the young women's group. Before they would start any of the meetings, the girls would stand up and they would repeat back what they call, you know, there's a young women's oath, and it's very, very monotonous, very, you know, supposed to be inspiring, but it's not. It's still more of a practice of bringing in some very, very, very real and very particular brainwashing techniques. And then, right, you know, then it gets really intricate in, how it's delivered, not just in church, but then over the pulpit. And really, culturally, it's reinforced within just the culture itself, and in the languages and everything that, you know, languaging, the verbiage that Mormons use within, you know, just talking to each other, referring to each other, and, you know, speaking
right
normally. Yeah.
So here's the thing, like, when people are being tied to stakes and killed, when children are being, you know, pieces of fetuses being consumed in a classic satanic black mass ritual, they do the same thing in the Catholic Ninth Circle. First step, of course, you traumatize everyone into obedience. But you mentioned at one point that the CIA, the FBI, recruit an inordinate number of people from among Mormons, their agents. Is this these churches, these so-called churches that do these satanic activities, are they just training grounds for these other agencies? I mean, this is one of the reasons this conditioning goes on.
Well, I know, I would say that could be more accurate than inaccurate. I know from what I've heard, and also a little bit of research that I've done on that, there was heavy recruiting from the government, CIA and FBI, in the Mormon church, so at BYU and other places, because, you know, for three main reasons, and these are pretty well-known reasons, but the main reasons were foreign language skills. You know, so the LDS church sends young men on these missions, and they send them foreign, they give them intense language training, and then they're there for 2 years, or, you know, around that amount, and they have a very, very real immersion experience where they do get to know locations and areas, and they're stationed in certain areas for a particular amount of time, and they're speaking that language. So when they come back, a lot of the young men go to BYU or whatever school they're going to.
Sorry, what's BYU? What's BYU?
BYU is going to be Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah.
Provo, south of Salt Lake.
Yeah, yep. It is. Okay. Yeah, in that area. So it's the school. It's the Mormon Church, the LDS Church. It's their university. So it is a private school. There's criteria to get in. You don't have to be Mormon to be accepted at BYU, but you still have to adhere to Mormon rules as you would with, you know, a private school. So there's certain standards that you have to adhere to, and you need to get an ecclesiastical leader to write a letter to let, you know, as a reference to even get in.
But Deborah, let me ask you something.
MCI, like, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just don't want to lose the focus of the original idea here, which is that we want to talk about the purpose of these crimes. Mm-hmm. And now, stepping back for a minute, how it can go on, I think we have an idea. I mean, in mm-hmm. at a very basic moral level, it's inconceivable how people can do this to children. And yet, mm-hmm. the fact that it's a whole system at work, people are able to do it and carry on, it's intergenerational mind control, allowing this stuff. What would you say is, and we ask the same question to Catholics all the time, like, what is the purpose of that church in terms of doing these crimes? I mean, what's your take on this as a former...
So son? My take on it, it has a lot to do... I mean, I've asked that same question. Like, it's a thought process I've been perplexed with because I don't know, it confuses me, but it really boils down to power. So if you think about being able to control a situation, you know, that's you feel very satisfied with that. When you want to even take it down to a small thing, everybody's had experience with younger children and the child is throwing a fit or there's something uncomfortable going on and you want that action to stop, when you can control that and you can get it to stop, you're relieved and that there's this feeling of, you know, again, satisfaction that goes along with that. Well, so then you take this on a bigger scale and you actually look at being able to control an entire population, an entire culture, mm-hmm. and guide that and then be able to extract money in a way that is, you know, so here I am going to, you know, be this leader and then I'm going to introduce, you know, God into this. Is now I am your Pope, now I'm your prophet. God is talking to me and God wants you to pay me 10%. And so that starts to feed in, but it really comes down to power. And if you can actually, and they do this, they actually want to, they choose into even experimentation. What can we do to the masses that we can actually track and read, you know, the reactions so that we get data back so that we can actually refine this even more. And eventually, once you have an entire culture, entire population working for you, then it ends up being on autopilot. They're in agreement, and you really do have ultimate right. power. So now you've got money and power and then all kinds of other things that come so with a, that. It's really, really seductive and
intoxicating. It's like a big social engineering project in these religions. It's like a training ground for all sorts of mind control, mass control techniques being used by the elites on the population.
Right.
And, of course, yeah. as income tax-exempt organizations protected under the law, if you interrupt a church service, you can go to jail. I mean, it seems designed to protect perpetrators.
Absolutely.
This enclave. We know money laundering happens in a huge way, organized crime in churches. Mm-hmm. And now Big Pharma, of course, using kids and drug testing, contributing lots of money to churches to do that. I mean, all of these ties are clear now. And mm-hmm. when someone like you is caught up in this, tell us a little bit about your story. Like something someone asked me all the time, especially in the NATO world, people, first thing they say to me is, why are you doing this, Kevin? What is motivating you to do this?
Ooh.
And I want to ask you the same question. I mean, I've often talked about why I'm doing it. I think it should be self-apparent. But for somebody like you who's been through such horrible, horrible stuff at a young age, how have you survived and...
Yeah.
Why are you doing now what you're doing? What are your hopes? But let's talk about that for a while.
Well, my hopes. I'm sorry. I'm.
It's all right.
You're asking me my why, and
yeah.
this. You know, this passion, and this desire come up inside of me. That is just I get. I have to use the word, I'm bewildered by it. Like, I can't believe it, except, and yet I get outraged because what I see over and over and over, the easiest way for me to bring it down is the exploitation of people's innocence or ignorance, either one, but people being exploited and their fears. And then, and taking that, you know, that fear, and in a religious situation, was what we're talking about. You have people that are coming really hat in hand on their knees, penitent with really, really genuine hearts. And then there is this person standing in front of them that they are choosing to trust. And not only is that trust betrayed, but it's exploited to the nth degree. And it, you know, and you're, it's just wickedly punish. It's horrible. And I watch that, and I know very clearly. I know that I can't just, you know, like run up on the steps and bang a drum and wave a flag, because that's going to go nowhere. There have been all kinds of demonstrations. There have been peace protests. There, even recently, there have been some things that have happened in Salt Lake City with that have tried to, you know, take a peaceful protest and call out, let's have, you know, let's talk about what's going on here. And it's not even acknowledged, you know. Mm-hmm. And so the public is trying to handle it from one way, and yet it's like I look at this and I'm like, they have no idea who they're dealing with. These people, this church, this level of the depth of what it is, that they have no idea what they think they're appealing to somebody or to something that thinks like they do, that really does believe.
Right, they don't understand what they're dealing with.
They don't understand.
Right.
No, exactly. So,
when somebody
you have
who
this
does,
thing, I'm outraged.
If somebody who does, you've looked this evil in the face, it's harmed you, you've somehow survived it.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you risking your life again? Why do you keep doing this? Like, what is that? That's a question people need to know, our passion, in order to really understand this.
The only way, really, what I've come to realize is the only way to really take that power away is to take your power back. And so I know I ended last time I was talking to you with saying, you know, the thing they use, boils down to is separation. If they can separate you from your society, from your culture, if they can separate you from yourself, from your God, if you can be isolated, even mentally, you feel isolated and alone, you're so much easier to control. And so if you can choose into yourself and you can start peeling away and doing independent thinking and be that wild card that they try to throw away and not you know, use, but to actually heal, you know, what it is in you that is so reactive, or look at yourself and ask some really critical questions about what is in your shadow side. You don't have to have this in your past, but I'm going to tell you, this satanic ritual abuse affects everyone. You can find, if you had the map, you would be able to track it back far enough to know that you have interacted with somebody that has this in their family somewhere. You have had employees, or you've had, you know, like best friends, and they're not even aware of some of the behaviors. And somebody, you know, I mean, there's so many tragedies, things that are happening that touch all of us, that you can track back to this. And so honestly, right, where I'm passionate about is, let's give the power back to the people. I can't do that though. I can be in my sovereignty, and I can do my healing work, and I can do what it is for me. And that power, that hold they have on me with all the brainwashing and all the terror and everything that I went through, it doesn't have the grasp on me. It doesn't have the trigger points that it used to have on me in a huge degree that it did, because I have deprogrammed that. I have focused on that deprogramming, and it's taken years. It's not been an easy path.
Right. Now, of course, they don't want that example to spread. They don't want people to see
that
you can break the conditioning. So naturally, they want to isolate people like you and me and discredit us and do the usual thing they do, short of killing us, which just turns us into martyrs, and they don't want that either. So when you're looking at this whole thing, and you're the groundbreaker in this in terms of the Mormon Church,
mm-hmm,
you are, like I said to you offline, you're the leadership on this, and the seeds you're planting now will bring up new generations of people who are aware of this. But what is your vision of what you would like in terms of the church? Does it got to be gotten rid of? You know where I stand on this. I mean, these institutions should not be allowed to operate, period. That's my position. But what's your take?
Yeah. You know what I would love, in all honesty, I've kind of had my own little fantasy of this massive class action suit that happens where both churches, with so much money at their disposal, have to pay for the damage that they've done to their members. You know, people, if whatever they need, do they need, what kind of therapies are out there or recoveries are available? And there's, you know, let's make them pay for this. Like, I, at great expense, I have spent years, I have spent so much money, I've spent so much time, so much anguish I actually gave up a few years of really being engaged with my children because I was working on therapy. And, you know, I could look at, you know, time lost and I can say that's unnecessary. Losing family members to it, you know, all of that stuff. So I would love to see a class action suit somehow be created. I mean, that's down the road, I'm sure, because more people would have to come up and say, oh, hey, I've got this, and hey, here's this. And it gets into evidential. But what I really would love to see is I would love one day to have, like, campuses around where there's healing centers where people can not only be validated, but they can actually really find a space of self that has been denied them. It's not that it's absent or not in them, because we all have this, but being able to have that journey and being authentic in that journey and connecting with what is divine in a really authentic way, that would be wonderful. And you know, it's been really difficult because this is so underground and this is so, you know, like you said, it's fairly new. There's not a platform to talk about this. There's not a platform to say, hey, I have this. And it's also dangerous because in the healing process of this, I mean, there's so much fracturing that goes on. There's a focused goal of fracturing all of the victims here. So, and this isn't just in the Mormon church, but that's obviously where I've had my experience. The fracturing happens so that they can have multiple personalities, so they can actually call up different personalities, you know, and so they can, you know, and that kind of power is part of it as well. And so what are these personalities? Are they aware of them? Are they reporting? You know, I mean,
here's the thing I don't understand.
Interested.
I've worked decades in this work as a counselor, a minister, a community activist. I still don't understand how a parent who brings their child into the world can then turn around and kill that child, can torture them, can rape them. Now, it isn't true that just because you're abused, you become an abuser, because I've known people, like including myself, who was badly abused in Sick Children's Hospital in Toronto when I was 3. I didn't do that to my children. Even though I wasn't even aware of it, I didn't harm my own children. So how is it that these people can do this? Are they human beings? Are they so programmed and brainwashed that they have no conscious control of what they're doing? I mean, I hope it's not a moot question, you know.
It's not a moot question. No, not at all. I mean, it's one that I've asked myself over and over also. I mean, because, you know, my parents, my father, my grandparents, you know, they were all part of this. It went back further than that too. And I remember sobbing over this so many times because it's like I'm saying this for me, I came into this planet. I came here ready to love. I was all a little bundle of love, and all babies are. It's like, you know, I was giving it freely. I would, you know, even got to a place where I would perform for it because it was so, you know, vacant and absent. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand, but I do know this. I know that my dad had been, well, he was in the system, so he had had similar experiences. He'd been just as tortured, just as abused. And yet at one point, there's this choice point that every human being comes to, especially in this situation. There's this choice point, and I don't know what it is that pushed him over, but at one point it actually becomes more comfortable to join up and to be a part of it than it does to not. You're still a victim. You're still in the system. But at some point, that kind of something about the power becomes very seductive. Something about the money, the I don't know, the whole thing. There's something about that all of a sudden hits the button of appeal and that tipping point, that choice point gets made. I never made that.
Okay. Here's one thing I want to interject here, that when you talk about choice point, it's like the evil becomes so normalized and so regular and everyone's participating that it doesn't seem like evil anymore. And, of course, that happens everywhere in society. You know, human beings are so adaptable, we normalize everything, and we don't see it as crime anymore, you know. 50,000 dead kids in residential schools, oh, well, yawn, pass the mustard. My point was, the point is, when breaking people from this, the first people who start to break it's kind of like you have to not, like when you talked about doing a class action suit, like I fell into that trap early on years ago or mm-hmm. said, oh, we'll take them to court. But the point is, class action suits are designed to protect the perpetrators. We've proven that time and again, shown it, that their sense of justice is the most you can get is some money and a gag order. That's it.
Right.
They
right.
keep getting to do what they do. They keep torturing children, but you've got a pat on the head and a check, and you can't talk mm-hmm. about it. So it's another way to silence victims. So
right.
that's why we talk about public inquiries, common law courts, direct actions to put the fear into these people to get them to stop doing it. And that works, but it's people on the ground having to take on the system, and that's the hard part. Anyway, we're just dialoguing
for sure.
on this.
Well, that's it. No, exactly. And you're making a really, really good, you're making a great point, because when you even, as you get into the system, I mean, this idea of a class action suit, it was like, I agree with you. It is a way to protect them. It's almost a fantasy kind of thing where you just want to, you know, really make a big noise and bring them to justice and that kind of thing. The problem is that's their game. That's their playground. They wrote the rule book in that playground. So what has to happen is a whole different dynamic that may or may not seem effective, but I'll tell you, when people start to think for themselves, that's effective. And the thing that is really powerful about that is, you know, it's part of human spirit, that human people want to be individualized, and yet they want to be communal, and they want to have original ideas, and they want to share them, and they want to, so, you know, and you start having, you know, kingdoms and rulerships and dictatorships, and people historically fight that. You know, this country was based on people jumping on a ship saying, we're out, you know, done.
Yeah. And so... Well, and that's the thing, too, you know, Deborah, because like we talked about before, people have a natural liberty and independence that keeps expressing itself all the time. Even mind-controlled church people, it keeps breaking out all the time. So it's kind of like there needs to be increasingly, like in society, with the government and this police state we're in more and more, there needs to be increasing controls on the way people think, where they move and everything, because rulers fear us. That's acts of fear on the part of the rulers, that they need us so controlled, right?
Right.
It's an act of weakness on their part.
Absolutely true, and yet it's framed, here's where the propaganda comes in, it's framed in a way that it's, and you know, if you can get enough people where you get this critical mass, one way or the other, then you're going to actually have people, now we've got, you know, kind of the mob mentality. So even if it's spiritual, like when there's a big mass, when there's a big, you know, conference in Salt Lake or whatever, and it doesn't even have to be that big. It could be a congregation. I have had people before lean over and where I'm in, you know, was in church or whatever, and I would have somebody just kind of come up to me later and say, oh my gosh, did you feel how powerful that was? Did you feel the spirit? And if I didn't, then I've got this social pressure to agree. Yeah, I did. Yeah, because, you know, I don't want to seem like I'm not in touch with, you know, the spirit and the divine. And so I don't even think you're going to get an accurate read on that. And so it's really easy to guide that, you know, as well. And so just coming back to your question, like, how does somebody make this choice? I have cried. I have cried and cried and cried because I didn't understand. I've eventually gotten to a place where I see it as so the facts state I was just a pawn. I was a human pawn for a different, you know, reason. So I was sold in this direction. I was delivered over here. The scheming behind it is it's very organized in how in a family what child goes where. So they don't put the children, typically you're not going to have children in the same location from the same families, and because they don't want you to be able to collaborate or corroborate any of the things later. So you'll be with different, I don't know what happened to my siblings, you know.
That's amazing, because that's exactly what they did in the Indian schools as well. They would never put brothers and sisters together. Break them up, give them different, you know, as a matter of fact, I've talked to Native people, five different people, they all have five different last names because they didn't want anyone to know who's related to who. Same genocide, right?
Yes. Well, it is. So again, it's just another way of creating suspicion within a family unit. And also, you know, you're feeling isolated again. Nobody understands me. Well, they probably don't. Or they probably do, but you don't know. So that's part of the problem when you're saying, what do you want to do and where do you want to see this go? It's like, how do you, you know, there's so many dots to connect, you know,
For yourself, and I want you to talk about that, but I just got a question here from a listener, if you don't mind taking a question.
No, that's fine.
In the interview, ask if you know anything about the Mormon Church keeping records of members who have mental disabilities, records of adopted children, babies
yes.
born out of wedlock, records of children
yes.
of divorced parents, that kind
yes.
of thing.
They do have record of that, in fact. Yeah, it's...
Why?
One of the things that is really thorough with the Mormon Church is family history. It's a huge practice. I mean, there's so many family history, .coms now, and I would say the church building, they've got a family history building here on buildings. It's like it's huge. So people will actively, as members of the church, that are trying to connect all of these generations and bring all of this history and everything together, and they want to track it back to the goal is to track it back to the original man and woman. They want to take it all the way back to Adam and Eve, and so they're very, you know, there's a real, real sweet spirit about let's find out who our family history is and who we're related to, and so they are definitely thorough in keeping records of who you are, who your children are, who the grandparents are. If there's a child that was adopted, they typically do it through the LDS social services. I mean, in the past, I don't know if there's independent places now, but it's still recorded. And so they know where that child goes. They know who had the child. Sometimes they know who both parents are. Sometimes they don't. But the whole, it's very
well. It's interesting, too, because in any system of genocide, the first thing you do is you document everybody into categories. Unless everyone's mm-hmm. documented, you can't exterminate them. And it's why churches and any dictatorship, the classic example was the Nazis, where they went to the Catholic Church and got all the records of everybody
mm-hmm.
Who was baptized.
They've
and everything.
Got the same.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is the way the common practice in the Catholic Church, but I do know... in the Mormon Church, everyone is given a number. They call it a membership number. So when you're born, especially if you're born in the covenant or whatever, but you, as a member of the church, once you're a member of the church, whether you're baptized or born into, you have a number. And so that helps with the tracking and the classifications. And then there's ceremony even in the temples. They want to do baptisms for the dead. People hear about that, and they're just like, we're just giving the opportunity to people that have... people have gone before us to be baptized into this church. And so in heaven, the idea is there's people that are
right.
that have died that are members of the church that are doing missionary work there, and
okay.
spirits that get to say yes, and now we baptize them. And so we've got this whole, we've got people that are numbered, there's people that have their numbers for membership. That
right. I mean, there's a whole rationale.
Oh,
right.
absolutely.
Now,
and
I wanted
participated in, so yes.
I want to go back to, I don't want to lose what we were talking about before, which is when
sure.
you're saying it seemed, where do you begin with all this stuff? Well, where you've begun in your own life. You've just begun to recover your voice, and
mm-hmm.
that's where it starts for everybody, recovering that voice, and then trying to find other people like yourself, and coming across this amazing brick wall when you've gone up against an established criminal institution, right? How do you operate?
Yes.
You're immediately turned into kind of a guerrilla warrior, because nobody, the two topics people do not want to get involved in, no matter how much of an activist they are, is they don't want to talk about child abuse, they don't want to criticize churches. And here
right.
we are dealing with both, right?
Both,
so,
exactly.
what's your take? I mean,
hello.
What is your perspective? And we've got about a few minutes left, but talk about that.
My perspective on how somebody begins this journey, or is that your question?
Sorry, say it again. You faded a bit.
You're curious about my journey, or what is it that you want to talk about? My journey on how to begin this, or how do people connect?
Yeah, let's say there's another Mormon listening to this. What would you say to them about what to do, and is there a thing you can offer them in terms of what you're trying to build now? Or whatever.
Okay, so what part of the trickiness here, it seems if you're Mormon, you're going to understand this. It is not very easy to leave the church. It is so cultural. It's really not an easy thing to do. So you have to go through this process in your own mind, and you have to be your own supporter, because when you first start having your own faith crisis, it is just that. It's a crisis. You're not really, you don't really know how to deal with it. You may step out and, you know, kind of test the waters and see if you can find somebody else in crisis, and then you have a shared crisis. Now we've got a crisis going on with two of you. So the process isn't exactly the easiest process. There are people out there. There are groups out there that are really helpful. There's some Facebook groups out there that you can find. There's some Mormon-based therapists that are great to talk to. But what I would say is be very aware that there's a lot of other ears that are listening. There's people that are watching who's participating. And I'm not saying it to be like, you know, don't be afraid. I'm just saying just be aware and know that as you move through this, you can go through your you want to see everything burn in hell, you know, you go from true believing to, you know, you just wish everything just like fall through the earth to a balanced place. And so as you move through this process and you get more and more balanced and more comfortable with what you choose to believe and allowing that to change more and more, be willing to step out of some of those groups and say, thank you, that was beautiful, I appreciate the stepping stone, but I need to move on, because maintaining a level of crisis is not what you're looking for. You're not trying to move into a different sort of crisis. And so it's been difficult. There's not really a lot of, you know, I don't know of anything that's going to, you know, that says, hey, by the way, I've got satanic ritual abuse. Let's all join, you know, this is a new deal. But I do know that you can get to an organization called online. It's quitmormon.com. If you want to officially leave the church and you have legal help doing that,
QuitMormon.com.
Then they can do that. QuitMormon.com. Yeah, definitely. One of the things that I would encourage people to do is to choose to look at things from a different perspective. You know, when you start this this crisis of your own, give yourself the permission and the kindness to have some self-talk and give yourself a different perspective. Well, what if this really was this? I mean, the gift I gave myself was this the reality is like, if I'm going to, you know, I'm going to pray, I'm going to ask God, is this true or is this true? And I've got a black and white, I've got a yes or a no. What my job is, I have to be open to either answer. I have to be open to hearing a yes, or I have to be open to hearing a no, you know, from whatever the source inside, and then weigh, you know, be okay with that. And if you know that you are not okay with either one of those answers, then you really do have to know that that's where you are right now. That's your starting point. That's okay. Right. It's not bad or good. It's just where you are. Don't fool yourself.
That's a good kind of general approach when you're talking to people when they're first beginning to come out of this. And I want to talk on a broader level, too, before the end of the show. There are six conditions which will allow a charitable organization like a church to lose its tax-exempt status under American law. It's called 501c3. And of the six, it's very interesting when you look at them. If a church lobbies politically, it'll lose its tax-exempt status. If it campaigns for a particular party or anything, like if the bishop or the prophet gets up and says, I want you to vote for this person, not allowed. And if they don't report unrelated business income, if they have corporate investments they're hiding under the table, if they're not reporting those things. All of those things, it isn't just the Catholic Church, because we've got researchers and a legal team working on this. Every church, these major churches are all doing this. They're all violating their terms of tax-exempt status, and yet the government needs these churches to keep people in line, so the government looks in the other way. But the point is their credibility is hanging around down around their ankles. And from your experience with the Mormon Church, have they ever said things like, here's who we should vote for? I know Mitt Romney, of course, ran for president. He was a Mormon. There's state senators who are Mormons. The whole state is like of Utah. It's like a theocracy.
Yes.
So violating that condition?
Yes, they have. I mean, and there was a Proposition 5 in California. That was a big, big thing where Salt Lake had actually directed stake presidents and church leaders in California. I think I remember, especially in the San Francisco area, and it had a lot to do with same-sex marriages. So it was really, you know, a sticking point, a real, real annoying sticking point for the church has been this LGBTQ issue. They want to, you know, and boy, just even recently they've had to address it again. But back when they did the Proposition 5, they were actively campaigning for people to vote a particular way, and they were even backing it up with the financial situation by bringing some people in. And there's plenty of these reports that you have to, in order to be a temple, to go to the temple, you have to be a full tithe payer, which means you have to pay your tithing. So then you report at the end of the year to your bishop and stake president that you've been a full tithe payer. So they would pull in people and say, you claim to be a full tithe payer. You, according to what you claimed and how much money you paid, that means you make X amount of money a year. And you now, we are asking you and telling you that you need to donate this amount of money to this proposition to support it. We are telling you now how to use your finances. Yes.
That's extremely blatant, because they're saying, we, the Mormon Church, come down on with this political issue. They're not allowed to do that under the tax laws of America. That's like shooting somebody. Of course, they're not allowed to kill children either, and they get away with it. But the point is, that's so blatant that they're doing that. And they're not allowed. They're breaking the law right there. They should not have tax-exempt status right there. Now, to take them on, it's churches are constructed, especially the Catholics and the Mormons, because they've got so much money and influence. They're constructed like the mafia, where the boss can't. There's layers of buffering layers. Mm-hmm. Where each individual church will have their own tax-exempt status. So it's hard to kind of bring one case with the IRS saying the Catholic Church or the Mormon Church is doing this. They say, well, what area, what particular church? But the thing, I'm just saying all that, is because they're so obviously guilty and there's so much evidence there. It's just a matter of people seeing that and acting on it. And I don't know.
Well, no, they did. I mean, this is some of the reasons if we're going to talk about this situation in California years ago, people were outraged. They were outraged, and that's why some of these, a number of these stories made it back to Utah. And I'm talking not back to officials. I'm talking it was a common knowledge kind of thing. And it was interesting to watch the membership reaction, because some of them were in favor, like, well, yeah, I mean, we gave these covenants in the temple to give everything to the church. So if they're going to call it in, we best be ready to call it in. Where others are saying, that's so unethical. I can't even believe it. And it's, you know, and even what the subject was about. I mean, so there was a volatility there, but they're so good at burying issues and creating the distracted, you know, right hand, left hand thing. So it's like, so what's going on over here? They're so good at that. And having the ability to get things buried and forgotten and move on, that people, and they're very, people are willing to, they're very placid about it. They don't want to keep this nasty stuff up. Let's talk about happy things.
Deborah, believe it or not, we're almost out of time again. It's too short a program, but we'll have to have you back on again. In the last couple of minutes, any final message or word you want to share?
My desire, my final message today is, you know, really just step in and champion yourself, you know, be your own best friend. And this may sound really esoteric, but it's like, of the person that you are, I remember choosing into this idea that I, at the end of the day, you know, in my belief system, when I was going to stand before God, I've gone to heaven, I'm dead, and there's this judgment day. I want to be able to just open myself and just say, here I am, the good, the bad, the ugly, the shadow, the bright, the whatever. I can't, you know who I am, and just no pretense. And so in order to be able to say that, I realized I needed to know my shadow side. I needed to know the things that I was even trying to hide from myself in order to be able to stand by that and say, you know what? This is me. That's just how this is. And so my encouragement is, like, the more you look to what you think you want to hide from yourself, face it, deal with it, choose it, love it, whatever, or realize it's not that big of a deal, that is really going to eliminate so much more outside control over us as a public, you know, us in general, because that self-acceptance is so huge. Again, not necessarily the easiest path, but I will champion that courage from here to the moon.
Reclaiming yourself, reclaiming your mind is
absolutely
brilliant. Deborah, thank you again for your courage and witness. We will definitely have you back to talk more. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, 2 minutes left. Just want to remind folks, please tune in next week, because that's when you're going to hear all the reports from around the world about what happened this week, taking down especially the Church of Rome, Church of England, stopping these depredations on children, making the arrests. I just got a notice from somebody in Ireland, I don't want to say yet where, about their single-handedly occupying a Catholic church in the rural part of County Kerry today, and the police showed up, and she had a good talking to them, and all hell broke loose. So this is the kind of thing we love to see, folks. And so tune in next week. We'll have reports of this coming week and what went on. Follow our work, murderbydecree.com. Write to us, thecommonland@gmail.com. Please get my latest book, The Border, a post-Canadian anthology by Kevin Annett. That's me, A-N-N-E-T-T, Amazon.com. I know, I don't like multinational corporations either, but, you know, when you're my situation, you got to grasp for straws, folks. That's where you come in. You can donate. Murderbydecree.com. Hit the donate button, please. I rely on all of you, nobody else. And in closing, this song is going out to all of those folks actively taking down the so-called Crown of England in Kannada, the Republic of Kannada movement, in England, the Republic of Anglia movement. Cromwell, come back, off with her head. Until next week, stay strong, stay clear.